From the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know, this is a Guy's Take episode. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. I've got a Guy's Take episode today. I have been collecting notes for this one for quite a while, which actually sucks, because today I had to go back and change a lot of them because I thought my argument was going to be a whole lot better for why Lightning sucks, but a lot of the data that made it look bad from my perspective, like my usage of it, is now outdated and no longer favors the Lightning sucks argument, which is what I wanted to start with. But obviously, the title is just a clickbait here, because I don't think it sucks at all, but I will tell you in what ways it does suck, and we'll talk about why I think it's actually important that it sucks the way it does right now. So if Lightning is supposed to be this world-changing protocol, that it's supposed to be this awesome payment layer, then why is it so sluggish? Like, why is development still very far from a consumer product, at least at the core, like the base client level? Like, Lightning is not, you can't, like, starting up a Lightning node is not a user-friendly process. Why do payments fail? Why does it have all of these limitations and trade-offs? It's got all these new things that we now have to worry about, like whether or not it's online, whether or not I'm risking funds by putting them in channels right now. That risk will be diminished in the future, but like, why would I use it now if the risk is high? Don't I have quote unquote better alternatives? If we're building a tool that's going to create mainstream adoption, then wouldn't it just be an app that's like super sleek and ready for grandma to use right out of the bag? Instead, it's like we took something that was already complicated and unfamiliar, like which is the system of Bitcoin, which is odd in and of itself for somebody who's coming from legacy finance and centralized services. And now we've made it even more confusing and complex and added in a whole bunch of other concerns and limitations that make having a wallet feel like you need a degree in cryptographic financial instruments. I mean, seriously, who wants to learn about channels and balancing and liquidity and then buy another computer device and stick it in their home somewhere? I mean, the list and cost of barriers right now to a normal user of this so-called revolutionary tool are really insane from the perspective of an average person. If you don't know why it's valuable or what's it good for, why would you go through all this trouble just for cheap payments? It's hard enough to wrap your head around the idea of not being able to, you know, reset your Bitcoin passphrase if you lose it. But now you need to build some bizarre contract with it and find another node to connect to open this thing called a channel. And you have to be online and you have to balance it. Blah, blah, blah. Just all kinds of crap. Like, what is all this confusion? This is just as Peter Risen puts, it's just a boondoggle, right? It's just a product that nobody could ever want to use. Like, when I have something like the Cash App, why would I use Lightning? So let's go a little bit specific into the problems of Lightning. First, payments do fail. I've had it happen numerous times. I've certainly have had way more payments go through than actually fail. But really, my payments, like, I say that because I want to have a strong argument for why Lightning sucks, but I actually haven't had a payment fail in quite some time, which has surprised me because I didn't expect it, like, particularly with the network growing and stuff, because routing is a challenge, especially as the network gets bigger and bigger. So now that I have my Lightning network running over Tor, it will be really interesting to see if, payment failures actually increase, if, like, I have, you know, does it affect routing and, like, seeking a route on the network, like that kind of thing? But, like, a good example, though, of actually maybe the last time that I actually had a failed payment was with the Lightning Torch. But that was just because I didn't have enough capacity. But technically, like, if I didn't know what I was doing, Like the Lightning torch at the time was $120 worth, and it's like 380 or something thousand satoshis. I can't remember exactly how much it was, but I didn't have enough capacity in any of my channels to send it out. I actually did receive it on the first try. I had one channel with enough capacity to receive. But I could not send out through that same channel. That same channel apparently did not have a route to the person I was trying to send it to, which was Airbits in Australia. That's where the Lightning network or the Lightning torch ended up. So I had to open an entirely new channel, and I specifically did not open it with Airbits because I didn't think I was going to use Airbits. I mean, maybe I would, but I'm not going to be traveling anytime soon, and it's not a service that I would use constantly. So I was like, okay, I won't open one with them. I'll open one that either is a better connected node or one. But you know, I had to make all these adjustments. I had to think about it. Like I had to know what a channel was. Obviously, I had to know that I needed more capacity. I couldn't just look at my wallet and be like, okay, I have this much in Lightning, so this is how much I am able to spend. Like I had to know that it was limited to a specific channel and that I had to open up a new channel with more than that capacity in order to send one out. So after I'd made that channel, which I think was with Lightning Power Users, which is just a community run, or I think that's actually Pierre Richard's. Like I think he is actually doing that. I don't remember, but it's one that a lot of people in our Lightning Liquidity group is using. So it's a really well connected node, and I just opened one with them, and everything went on. The payment went through fine. But you know, on occasion payments aren't super fast. After I made that channel, after I opened that channel up, that one actually was fast. But by fast I mean like practically immediate. A lot of times, like I will get that spinning wheel, and you know it'll take like 6 seconds or something, or I'll have to go back to the page that's waiting for the confirmation, and it will say confirmed, and then I'll go back to my extension or my wallet, and it doesn't. For some reason, it doesn't update the confirmation, and it takes like 10 or 15 seconds, and then I refresh, and then suddenly it shows me that I've got a confirmation. So that's what I'm talking about when I say payments don't end up being super fast. However, with a lot of the development, I actually haven't had that problem in at least 3 or 4 weeks. In fact, what I was playing around with today was a tool called paywall.link, which was actually built by a friend of mine that I met at the Bitcoin meetup. Tim, which we're actually probably going to have him on the show pretty soon, so that's actually going to be a really fun discussion. But I made two payments testing out his service and that little tool, and they were so fast that I never actually even saw the spinning wheel. So that's what I mean by immediate payments, that I literally click, and then the thing gives me a check mark before I even have time to move my eyes from where I clicked to where the check mark shows up. And that's what I want in a payment system. I want it to be immediate. So we'll talk about this tool again a little bit later, just because I think it really shows how amazing the proposition of electronic cash and that I think Lightning represents that. But I'm getting into good stuff while I should still be bitching about it. So I don't doubt things will get faster, but right now, things are still limited. It does give me a spinning wheel sometimes. And another big limitation is part of that problem that that showed up with the Lightning Torch is that I have to lock up, quote unquote, I have to put money into Lightning channels that's a lot more than the payments that I'm typically making. So like just with, and with backups like just now arriving, I'm in a pretty dangerous spot. It's risky to have money in channels, essentially. It's not as risky as it was 2 months ago, but there is still risk. I could still lose the money that I have in channels if something happens or I have a hard drive failure or something. Like right now, I think it technically has to have since I'm only using one channel at a time for any payment, if I have a hard drive failure, right now I've got an SD card that backs up the, that holds the backups. So again, it's less than it was, but it's still certainly not as riskless as just holding it in a Bitcoin address, like not even close. Because I'm basically having to lock up about $500 into channels, and then I only make, a dollar payment here, a $10 payment here. I withdraw $20 from this, or send, $15 there. Like, it's all small payments, and I need $500 locked up, or maybe even more, to make it happen. And essentially, the biggest payment that I can either receive or make is the Lightning Torch, was $120. And I think my biggest channel is like $140 or something like that. It's not much more than what the Lightning Torch was. So, and as so many people constantly point out, it is not consumer friendly. It's not. Like, oh my God. It requires a lot of knowledge to operate a node, to understand what a channel is in the first place. And like I said, Bitcoin was already a huge change for people in thinking about how to manage payments and secure your funds. Like, it's a wholly different thing than legacy finance, like what people are used to in centralized services. And now Lightning is making it even more confusing. Everybody who did learn how Bitcoin works now has to learn what Lightning works. And its incentives and risks are different. It's not the same. It's genuinely like the difference between TCP and HTML. Like, they're built in the same system, but they certainly aren't the same thing. Like, you don't have the same, or I guess not HTML, it'd be HTTP is kind of the analogy I'm looking for. But they're not the same thing. Like, they're completely different things, even though they run as part of the same stack. So if users can't just like spin up a node and without thinking about it, just open up their wallet and make thousands of payments without thinking or learning anything, then how is this ever going to work? Like, how could I possibly think that this is the future that's going to happen and that nobody even has anything comparable? Another, channels go offline. The always online thing, it's a pain. Sometimes, like if I'm picking crappy nodes to connect to, it is not uncommon for me to go to my node and find a channel offline. Sometimes, like, even like friends that I'm connected to in our liquidity pool, I'll send him a message and be like, dude, your node's offline. And he'll have to go and check on it and like log back in, and it refreshes and then comes back online. But, his node has some sort of little problem. The software's still very early. And particularly since Autopilot is kind of garbage right now. Autopilot does not, it's terrible at judging what a good or a bad node is. So if you're just relying on Autopilot to open channels and close channels for you, right now it's pretty much, it's very limited. And you're not going to have an amazing user experience with Lightning. Like, it will work a lot of the time, I think, but it does not, it is by no means a end-all be-all solution yet. I'm not even close. And in fact, a lot of work on Autopilot isn't even being done right now. They're prioritizing other things, which seems ridiculous, right? Like, this is a consumer product. Like, why would you not be working on the things that make this as streamlined as possible for the user experience? Like, aren't you just letting someone else get ahead of you in the market? Aren't you letting someone else make the easy to use wallet that isn't using Lightning, or that's on Ethereum or ERC20 token or blah blah blah? So if you don't, if the user does not know how to open reliable custom channels, then they're going to be frustrated because developers aren't working. That's not what their focus is at the moment. And Autopilot is just kind of basic right now. I think there actually is a couple of people working on making Autopilot a lot better, but it's not a priority right now. They're working on other things. And so again, these are big barriers to the average user. Not only do they need some basic understanding, but they now need to understand it well enough And I mean a basic understanding of Lightning. But now they need to understand it well enough to have reliable channels and to open custom ones, because the default, the autopilot, doesn't really do a great job. And why aren't the developers working on this? Like, don't we want the easiest, simplest user experience? In fact, the Bitcoin developers do the exact same thing. All they seem to care about is the protocol performance, the computational costs being low, the security being high. I mean, the reference client is utter garbage when it comes to use as a wallet. It doesn't have any of the features. It's not got multi-sig. You can't remotely connect to it. It's not got a block explorer. Why don't the developers want Bitcoin to be easy to use? Why is the reference client the crappiest wallet you can get? Now, like, I think that's a really analogous thing. Like, that's kind of what we're dealing with Lightning wallets right now, or the Lightning client. But like, as far as what I've got right now, I have 20 channels in total, and that was probably with a mix of another 10 to 15 that I opened and closed and or forced close from someone that opened to me. And those are mostly due to offline users or just autopilot selecting a crappy node or just setting up a channel that didn't do me any good. But I have 20 channels right now. It wasn't until basically just a few weeks ago, I think 2 weeks ago, maybe three, that I actually had more Lightning transactions than I had Bitcoin transactions to make my Lightning wallet usable. So when I was first writing down these notes, I literally had more Bitcoin transactions than I had Lightning transactions, which means it was a huge net negative for me to start using or to set up Lightning, because I wasn't really using it for much. So Lightning wasn't saving me anything on fees or payments at that point. The total number of Lightning transactions now is a lot bigger, though. So I can't really use that complaint anymore, because in the past 2 or 3 weeks, I have not touched my channels, and I have had tons and tons of payments. I really don't even know how many there are right now. I haven't gone back and counted. But up until a few weeks ago, I was mostly just paying fees for transactions that I wouldn't even have had to make otherwise. So, like, I was just paying fees to open channels. It wasn't even buying coffee or spending Bitcoin somewhere, or sending it to local Bitcoins or exchange, blah, blah, blah. Like, I was just doing it to open channels to use Lightning. So I wouldn't even have had to have made those 20 or so transactions if I wasn't trying to make Lightning work. So, but this is because I'm focused on, I want to learn how to manage channels and explore the software. So, you know, it costs me a bunch of on-chain fees. Like, I got to send regular transactions to do that. I've actually spent more time learning and playing with channels than actually using them to make payments on the Lightning network. But that's kind of, at the same time, that's a little bit just in its nature, because Lightning's payments are stupid fast and they don't require really anything. It's copy paste and then click. So managing channels is something that I actually have to read about, and like, I have to look at nodes and stuff and see which one I might want to connect to, and see, you know, what's online, what's a service that's updating things constantly and that people are using, so that I have a lot of routes to a lot of people, like that kind of thing. So I've spent a lot of time on just the managing of Lightning, way more than I have spent just like using Lightning to make a payment. But again, that's a little bit of a cheap complaint, because you don't have to spend any time making Lightning payments, really, unless something fails or doesn't go through, and then suddenly I'm back to, you know, looking at my channels and stuff. So, in fact, managing channels is actually a service that I've made Lightning payments for. So like, I've actually sent Lightning payments to buy liquidity in some channel that I had, or sent a paid for an on-chain transaction with like a submarine swap to get my own liquidity in some channel without having to use some other service. And basically all the Lightning games that I've played Even though now I'm doing stuff that I actually find fun, most of the Lightning games were just so that I could test that it's working and play around with Lightning. Like, it was that I wanted to see how Lightning worked, not because I actually wanted to play Lightning.spin. I wanted to play Lightning.spin so that I could use Lightning. So I wouldn't have played the game otherwise. Like, if it was just a roulette wheel on some website somewhere without Lightning, I wouldn't have done that. So we could consider that, you know, analogous to, couldn't we consider that analogous to me just spending all my time learning all the advanced features of MySpace, even though nobody's actually using it? Like, that it's, even though it's like not user friendly, or it's real convoluted, and while everybody else is using Facebook because Facebook is free and user friendly and already growing so fast. So, like, knowing all of this, I'm sure there's something else. I'm sure there's something else that I can complain about Lightning, but that's basically the bulk of what I've got so far. It's not user friendly. Payments don't always work, even though that's much less of a problem these days. It is a risk. And you have to learn about channel management. You have to know what a channel is. All this crazy stuff. It's a huge, huge barrier for understanding. There's a big learning curve. So how could a reasonable person think that this made sense? That Lightning Network was the future, if it's such a crappy consumer product right now? We're still 2 years away from making this thing like truly secure and seamless. And isn't somebody else just going to come in and just take the market? Like, isn't that just passing the torch to somebody? Well, you know, quote unquote, handing it off to somebody else, just letting someone else take the reins and completely do this the right way by making it user-friendly and fast and figuring out all the security stuff later. And I'm a reasonable person. Like, I'm open to new ideas. I think about it all the time. I stop and I don't let myself, even though I'm, like, incredibly confident about Bitcoin and the Lightning Network, I don't want my excitement to cloud my judgment. And it easily could. I get really excited about this stuff. So I stop and I think. And I go through what I know Bitcoin to be useful for. I know what Lightning is going to accomplish and, like, kind of its trajectory. So I think, am I being stupid? Am I just, am I just getting excited about something because it's going to make my bags worth more? What if I'm just chasing a pipe dream and something else is just going to replace it all? And how could I possibly, am I really confident? Like, how could I possibly be confident in the face of all of that? And I'll start by saying, yes, I absolutely am. I truly think that Lightning is going to be an unbelievably widely used and amazing protocol. So how? Why could I think that? Now that we've covered all the bad of Lightning, let me take a break. I'm going to go get a drink, hit our sponsor really fast, and then we will come back to explain why I could possibly think Lightning is revolutionary in the face of everything that we just covered. First and foremost, something that is such a painfully widespread and what I think is a completely, completely misconstrued perspective is that Lightning is not a consumer product. It is an internet protocol. To think of the base Lightning client as a consumer product that should be ready to use out the gate is 100% the wrong way to look at this. There is an enormous group of people that even want on-chain Bitcoin transactions to be a consumer-level product, one that is essentially free just like everything else on the internet, and that everyone would just use all day, every day, like their smartphone. That's what Bitcoin Satoshi's vision is they think everything is going to happen on-chain with normal Bitcoin transactions. I think this is analogous to thinking that the average user on the internet is going to be using TCP/IP connection packets to send and do everything on the network. And they're going to use a TCP/IP client, a wallet built or a piece of software built around just making TCP/IP simple to accomplish this. In reality, IP is dormant for the vast majority of the time you're on the internet. Your IP address isn't doing crap. DHCP is a different protocol used to send information to establish and lease IP addresses from the internet. Then it's static until some huge change happens, until you leave your home network. I've had the same IP address at home for months. And aside from a few static IPs on my home network, only if I take my phone or laptop out of the house and then come back into the house does it actually reestablish and have a new IP. In fact, that's actually not true, because the way the lease works is that if I come back, it's usually leasing the exact same IP address. So typically it will get the same IP address as soon as I get home. But other than that, IP addresses don't change in my house at all. TCP is a completely different protocol. It's just used to ensure that packets sent using IP forwarding are reliably received, that they come in the right order, that they aren't missing packets and they don't have errors. Then there's DNS, another completely different protocol, whose whole job is to just obscure away the work done by TCP/IP. So the TCP/IP stack, so that you don't have to know, you don't have to type in a bunch of IP addresses to get to Google servers. You simply type in Google in your browser and it reaches out and finds the destination. Then we got HTTP on top of all of that confusing shit. And its job is to turn the word Google into something that you can just click on with your mouse. So you can just click on the text. That was a breakthrough. That was a huge shift in how those protocols worked. And that sends a request to the DNS server with the Google URL, and which they then request. They've requested it from Google, the actual IP address to connect to. Then they send that address back to your computer, which then sends a TCP connection to the given address, which establishes a connection, and then starts sending packets back for the website, which TCP then checks for errors and chronological order. Requests for retransmission if it's missing a packet or there's an error, and then builds an HTML document on your computer, and then retrieves hundreds of other HTTP links to data on servers, other servers for images, embeds, videos, tons of other protocols all working on the same thing. And at this point, we haven't even talked about there's routing protocols like BGP, EGRP, all in this process. There's so many moving parts to this, and not a single piece of that monstrosity in the process of establishing and maintaining internet connections and building websites is simple or user-friendly at the protocol level. The protocols themselves are a huge, convoluted mess, but why does the internet work? How is it that we never see it? It would require years of study to understand everything that's going on. But you know what is a consumer-facing product? Not those protocols. An ASUS router is. A desktop computer is. The AT&T internet service is. Your Netgear modem. The Chrome web browser. Apple Pay. These are consumer-facing products. Do you know who doesn't design those? Protocol developers. The protocol developers design the protocol to be secure, reliable, and operational. And then consumer products are built by consumer-facing companies that utilize those open-source decentralized protocols to create an experience for the user. And it took years and years to build these things out reliably and securely. And the fact that Xerox had their own competitor protocol didn't make any difference. And had the base layer protocols like TCP and IP had to change constantly, all of the stuff built on top of it would have been broken and would have required constant change to keep up with what they were trying to do at the base layers. The engineering perspective that Bitcoin at the base layer should house every single feature or type of script or complex contract, or that every single request and payment should happen at the broadcast layer, is analogous to saying that we should have gotten rid of that entire stack of protocols, hypertext, DNS, BGP routing, all the routing, IP addresses, everything. And we should have somehow figured out how to cram all of those features into the different types of headers and types of TCP packets, and that TCP should do the entire job of the internet by designing it to do a huge stack of things all at the exact same layer. Not only is that, like, to put that bluntly, it's both absolutely ridiculous and it is terrible engineering. That is not the job of TCP. TCP has one job, and that's why everybody uses it, because it does that one job beautifully. And from that one job, we can build another protocol to work off of it, so that we never have to break how TCP works. We don't have to update TCP to add a new feature or open a new website or do anything. Like, we can use a new layer. We can use another protocol that specifically does the one job that it's good at, and we don't have to require TCP developers to build the whole freaking internet. That's what you're asking. You're asking for all the developers to work on this one giant protocol. You completely lose the benefits of a diverse ecosystem if you require everyone to work with the TCP protocol and everyone to agree on what features exactly are going to be included in the TCP protocol. So the brilliance of the Lightning Network, unless, of course, you've been fed a crapload of nonsense from people who don't know how it works, is that it remains trustless. Almost all of the work being done right now on the actual Lightning Network protocol is focused on reliability, performance, making nodes recoverable and secure, reducing the risk, making the risk of losing funds as low as possible, and ensuring that the user is always in control of the funds in their channels, that they are not asking permission or sharing ownership with anyone. They always have the right to go back to the Bitcoin network and arbitrate who is the real owner of the coins in the channel. Now, if you believe that you can make Lightning Network tokens that aren't backed by Bitcoin, or that it's going to be censored, and that it's a custodial relationship, blah blah blah, well, then you just don't have the slightest clue how it works. You can go back and listen to episode. I don't even remember. It's my article has it on Medium. Is answering. Oh crap! What's the friggin' title of it? Don't count your FUD. Don't count your FUD before lightning strikes. That's what it is. And it was something like that. And I just go through and explain why a lot of the common nonsense about Lightning Network is like there are plenty of things to talk about limitations on Lightning Network without just making crap up. But a lot of people do. The biggest, most widespread complaints about Lightning are things that have nothing to do with Lightning. But with Lightning, with what Lightning really is, ignoring all the nonsense out there about custodial and blah, 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 there's still a ton of work to be done. There's still a lot of work to be done just in reliability and security and risking of funds and making sure the user's always in control. Channel state backups have just been recently implemented. It's still, and that, even just channel state backups is still just a step one in having recoverable backups. Like, that's not, it's not like, oh, we got channel state backups and now we're done. There's still a ton of work to be implemented later on down the road to make those more reliable, to make them more fluid, and to have like a derivative backup so you can back up one thing and essentially be able to recreate future states. And then we've got like things like L2 where you don't have to keep all your channel state backups. You just keep your most recent one. Like, there's going to be tons of changes to come to that. It's still literally just step one. Watchtowers are a part of that, of securing it and making sure that the user is always safe with funds in their channels. The security, the independence, and the censorship resistance of the node is without question the top priority. If right now that means payments are slow and you have to learn a lot about channels, that's irrelevant. That's completely irrelevant, because it has no use case whatsoever without the security, the independence, and the censorship resistance being maintained. Of course, the base clients are not consumer-friendly yet. It's not even what developers are focused on right now. They're focused on making it a solid rock of a protocol that extends the assurances that the Bitcoin layer can give. So if you have a user-friendly Apple Pay wallet that gets accidentally hit by a 51% attack or has to ask permission to make a transaction or gives no privacy whatsoever to the user or just so happens to accidentally destroy all of the money in your wallet because of a bug in the contract that's holding your funds, nobody's going to give a shit how easy it is to use. We're talking about protocols that are going to secure billions and even trillions of dollars in value eventually. They have to be rock solid. They have to provide security against billion-dollar or even trillion-dollar attacks. If you have a handful of block signers that can just censor whatever transaction they feel like, or a block size that makes verification by the end user a complete joke, then your user-friendly product, your end-user software, is not competing with Bitcoin. It's competing with Apple Pay and Visa. That's one thing that people do not understand. Bitcoin is not a payment network. To this day, it is and always will require a learning curve to use Bitcoin. It does not compete with Apple Pay. Apple Pay is easier to set up, is easier to use, and requires zero understanding whatsoever. It is very different from what Bitcoin is very different from what the average user is familiar with. And there is no cryptocurrency at all that closes this gap, that comes close to the ease of use, the integration, and the simplicity of Apple Pay. And it's impossible for them to reach that point. The architecture looks nothing like it. And they don't even know, and if they don't even know what their value proposition is of a triple entry system, of a public blockchain, if they don't even know that it's trying to buy coffee faster than Apple Pay, well then of course it's never gonna reach that point. Because the easier they make it to use, they're going to trade off what its value proposition actually is, that you're owning an asset that cannot be counterfeited, that's easily and quickly proven as 100% real, whose ownership is not contested by any social, political, or corporate power anywhere in the world, that's entirely impossible to censor and is completely permissionless and, fingers crossed, private. That's what Lightning Network is actually giving us to Bitcoin: privacy. If you don't know that that is what makes Bitcoin different, and payments are a distant, like, sixth thing on that list, then you would not even have the slightest clue, you wouldn't even have the beginnings of a foundation for understanding why Lightning is absolutely groundbreaking. For all the people who think that the Bitcoin network use case is for paying for coffee or just buying stuff online, you know, if I put on those sunglasses, like if I look at everything, if I look at Lightning from that perspective and look at the main wallets and running a full node and then running a node, a Lightning node on top of it. If I'm looking at it through that lens, yeah, Lightning looks stupid. It looks like a redundancy of something that we already have that's more confusing and less convenient. But that's not even close to what makes Bitcoin valuable. You go back and listen to the Hans Hermann Hoppe piece, How is Fiat Money Possible? If you want to know what Bitcoin's multi-trillion-dollar value proposition is, it is not online payments. I cannot emphasize this enough. Cheap online payments are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. There's not a single online payment service that I use which charges me a fee or takes more than a second to confirm. Apple Pay is stupid fast and so easy to use, and it's integrated by default into a device that I already have with me at all times. I don't have to install something new. It's there. But not one of those systems, PayPal, Apple Pay, Square, none of it, none of them are permissionless. So I would never hold more than a few hundred dollars in value with any of them. I'm reluctant to keep even a few thousand dollars in my bank account now. I get nervous putting money into the bank, and I breathe a sigh of relief when I have it back in Bitcoin, because I can't verify a damn thing that my bank does. And if they decide one day that me moving $6,000 was suspicious, they just freeze my account. They can cause me months of headache, and I'm required to explain to them where it came from. Who were you sending it to? I gotta send them in a blood sample and a whole list of every piece of identifying information about me possible, a whole string of data that's enough that they're going to send to multiple institutions that now have the power to completely obliterate my financial livelihood, and I am just trusting that they won't decide to completely screw me over. I have no way to verify what they're doing. I ask for my funds because it's under their control, not mine. I need their explicit permission to send it somewhere, and the burden is on me to prove to them that I have a legitimate use for something that's mine. This is what Bitcoin has that no other system even touches, including the stack of garbage altcoins that are out there. BSV has like, I think it's like 300 nodes now. And I think 4 mining nodes own 75% of the hash power. And the hash rate is so low right now that I could literally rent hash power with like $20,000 and reorg like 6 blocks. Plus, not a single node is run independently by users. In a Melik Manukian at Real Ludwig Art on Twitter, it said back when it was 444 nodes, which now it's like just in the low 300s, he did a scan to see where they are, and 266 of them were on DigitalOcean servers, 32 were on Amazon servers, 30 were on Hetzner, which I don't even know what that is, 15 on OVH, 13 on Google, and 11 on Alibaba. That was it. It has barely any users on BSV, and already, like, 5 cloud services could just have a conversation and make the entire network unreachable across the globe. Ethereum maybe has 2 fully archival nodes now. Everybody's running light clients in FastSync. Everybody. I've seen people try to claim that it's 4 or 5, but everyone I've seen try to confirm this cannot confirm it. It just seems like speculation. And syncing a fully archival node, there's a... Oh man, I can't remember who wrote it. It was a female. It wasn't Elaine. It was somebody at... Oh, I'm not going to remember it. I'll try to remember to link to it after I'm done with this. But they tried to sync... I've seen a number of people try to sync fully archival nodes, and it takes months of problems and failures and restarting from everybody that I have seen try to do it. And one of them was literally dealing with a single connection. That's why I truly think there are 2 fully archival nodes. Because they did finally, after like 2 months, they did finally get their node up, but they had one peer the entire time. And I guess that one peer is probably Infura. I don't even know. But yet on Bitcoin, I alone have 3 full nodes at my house, which is completely redundant and pointless. It's no greater benefit to have 3 instead of 1. I'm just trying out different software and I'm screwing around with it because I love it. But I could easily spin up another. Because of that, I never have to be concerned that I'm receiving fake Bitcoin in my wallet, that the network is going to be unreachable to me. I have one running over Tor already. I never have to. So if something crazy happened and my government decided to censor the Bitcoin network, my Tor node would work fine. I know that I could never receive Bitcoin Cash because I'm trusting some service to feed me data that, let's say, they just decide that BCH is the real Bitcoin and didn't bother to tell me. I have no concern that that's going to happen because I'm not relying on a service. I'm doing the validation entirely my own. I don't have to worry that someone's going to reorg my confirmations and double spend the money that or undo the money that was spent in my Lightning channels. I don't have to worry that my coins are going to get locked in some multi-sig bug that makes my coins completely unspendable, just lost forever, while I was not even touching my keys. I didn't send a false transaction. I just thought I was holding it in a, quote, secure wallet. And then suddenly they're just gone. Just poof. I'm talking about the parity bug on Ethereum, if you're, you know, interested in checking that out. And I know that the attack surface of the signature that's defending my balance is tiny, explicit, and under the most secure cryptographic assumptions that are out there. And I know that developers are not trying to add in a whole bunch of pointless features, that they're not going to hard fork the network in a way that completely destroys that security assumption and starts the Lindy effect over every 6 months, like BCH. That's one of the most ridiculous things to me, like the Lindy effect. For those of you who do not know, that's basically, it's an idea of the confidence gained from how long the network has remained secure and survived. It's something has lived X amount of time, therefore the longer time it has been alive and has worked, the more sure I can be that it's going to continue to live longer and continue to be secure. But if you hard fork the protocol, you have eliminated any and all assurances that the network has from the Lindy effect. You are starting over because you've completely altered the consensus rules. No matter how small, you have created a new and untested set of security assumptions. So it destroys the value proposition of that. It destroys the idea that no one can trick the network into thinking that my coins are theirs, because now there's a whole new consensus that no one can execute a hole in the script that we knew was secure before, and now we have to figure it out again. Is it secure now that we've changed the rules, now that we're all looking at the network under a completely different set of assumptions? And it doesn't even matter how small that change is. If it's a consensus rule change, then without me moving the coins, without me changing the signature, without me doing anything, the assumption of the security of my coins and signature is completely different. And that is what Bitcoin has that no other system even comes close to, including any cryptocurrency that I have read about. And I also know that the trend into the future is going to have more nodes, that there are going to be more reasons to run a node, that there's going to be even wider spread consensus, that it will continue to work better over Tor in the long run, not worse. And that developers have a die-hard focus on performance, security, and validation that's as fast, as streamlined, and as trustless as it possibly can be. That is the power. This is what makes Lightning Network powerful, because it enables a whole new set of features and possibilities for Bitcoin without affecting Bitcoin's assurances at all. It takes Bitcoin's capacity, and rather than doubling it or tripling it or doing it or making it 10 times as big, which is all a trade-off to the flat architecture of the network, to the fact that it's incredibly easy and fast to verify and ensure that you're not receiving some garbage token or that the consensus rules haven't been changed on you. Without altering that at all, Lightning gives a 1,000x, 10,000x improvement over capacity, all while expanding the features, adding in an entire array of things that can be done with it off-chain, while still using Bitcoin as settlement, while still having entirely, like, complete proof of reserves, and making peer-to-peer payments actually peer-to-peer, that they're unicast instead of broadcast, which is what the blockchain layer is, and that it adds privacy by default by offloading this from the transparency layer without losing the reserve assurances, without losing the scarcity that you get at the transparency layer. And at the same time, adding literally the possibility of thousands of unique features all at once with a layered change, it does not alter the consensus process whatsoever. And at the end of all of this, it's being done in a way that the entire protocol stack can still be run by a single individual, that you can run your own Lightning node, you can run your own Bitcoin node, you can put it all onto a Raspberry Pi, a $40 computer, and have all of this stuff at your fingertips, even with the learning curve. That's extraordinary, that I never have to rely on a third party for payments, that I don't have to use a bank if I don't want to. And yes, it requires a learning curve right now. So does Bitcoin. So does everything in the crypto industry. But it is getting easier to use every day. I've already offloaded, even though this wasn't true when I started my notes, today I have definitely offloaded at least 3 times the payments onto Lightning as the Bitcoin layer transactions that I was needed to enable it. So like with like 20 channels, I know I've made at least 60 payments now. Again, I haven't checked, so it could be near that number, but I that's a rough estimate for me. And while congestion was high just a couple of weeks ago, just for fun, I made like 15 Lightning payments that day. I bought a bunch of stupid stickers that I didn't need. I have a whole drawer full of Lightning stickers. I gambled some nickels on a game that I didn't really care about. I did a number of things just because the congestion was high and people were talking about fees. And even though I knew, I really kind of wanted to, I hadn't had the option to prove to myself that the Lightning payments have nothing to do with it. That it's just a completely different layer where congestion on the settlement layer has absolutely no effect whatsoever on what I'm doing on Lightning. And the most exciting thing about it is this is literally just the beginning. I am already finding it. I make Lightning payments. When I'm buying stuff or playing with things or go to BitRefill to get an Amazon card now to pay something for real quick at a discount, I'm making Lightning payments more often than I'm making Bitcoin payments now. And this is the beginning. This is early. This is beta software, and it works. And it kind of blows my mind that it's working as well as it does for all of the things that it doesn't have yet. It doesn't have multipath payments. Again, I'm having to lock up $500 or $600 just to make a $20, a reliable, you know, $50 payment, which technically I could go up to 100 and whatever based on my largest channel. But still, just in the average sense of things, I'm only really making $20 or $30 payments are kind of the biggest ones that I'm making typically, and I'm having to lock up $500 or $600 to do it. But that's because we don't have multipath payments yet. When multipath payments happen, if I have 20 good channels, then my limit, if I've got $500 locked up, is spending $500 because I can use every channel at once as long as I can find a route. State backups are going to get more reliable. The watchtowers are going to make it far less risky. I'm not going to have to worry about losing money nearly as much on anything in an open channel on the network. With nodes being always online, like I can easily see with L2 and Schnorr signatures and like aggregation things come to the network. And then with protocols that are now using, like, that are now aggregating transactions among decentralized among participants that are just openly joining this and doing it trustlessly, like Wasabi Wallet, is that you have tons of people mixing payments together. With that kind of a thing combined with a Lightning Network, like always on set of nodes that can make micropayments with each other, like I wouldn't doubt it for a second that we'll reach a point where the opening and closing of channels is never done by yourself. That you are never closing a payment channel, without reaching out to other people on the Lightning Network with always online nodes. I mean, when Autopilot can basically handle that task for you, Lightning Network is the perfect network in order to aggregate those sorts of payments. Every single payment channel that you open and or close could be opened or closed with hundreds of other channels all at the same time, and you can split the fee using the Lightning payments. And you've got always online nodes that can easily coordinate the opening and closing of this, and you've got Schnorr signatures, which makes it so economical. You're saving tons on the data costs on the blockchain, and then subsequently the fee, because your data footprint is tiny in comparison, and you're getting huge amounts of privacy. You're essentially doing mixing just for the effort of lowering your on-chain footprint, just for the effort of getting a fee. You're saving money and getting your privacy back at the exact same time, and it's not even for payments. It's just for channels. So your link on the Bitcoin blockchain to your signature that's securing your coins is obscured. Your public key isn't even directly known to the addresses that you actually own. So the number of things that are still going to be coming, like the addition of submarine swaps, when Autopilot is taking advantage of Loop and buying you liquidity on the network without you even knowing, when Autopilot can aggregate transactions, there's so many things left to come. And the possibility of features in the future are essentially limitless, because you've got an entirely off-chain set of scripts that you can now use to lock up Bitcoin payments. And you're always doing it with the assurances of the Bitcoin script. You're just using a hash of whatever elaborate contract that you're using to lock it up. And then we've got multi-party payment channels. We've got channel factories coming in, where you can do this with multiple people and offload even more data from the blockchain, and make Lightning channels open, make it so you can open and close Lightning channels without having to go to the chain. And again, you're never compromising the assurances of the base layer. You're remaining censorship resistant. You remain permissionless. You remain totally in control of your coins and your keys. And that is a game changer. To think that we are reaching a point where something like this can actually scale to billions or trillions of payments, and we're seeing just the start of a protocol that can pull that off while still being able to run a full node validating the entire history of the currency, the reserve of every channel that you were going through, every single assurance of the consensus rules and the monetary policy on a $40 computer. That is the type of protocol stack that will utterly change the world. Everything we think we know about finance is undone, and we are starting it from scratch with that. Lightning Network does not even have to be awesome, because it already is. It already is in its current state. It's a breakthrough. So, that's my thoughts on it. I don't think I have anything else to add. There's going to be a ton of other stuff to talk about in comparing it to capital markets, and that how capital markets are built in layers. Because I think the, even though TCP/IP and like HTTP and things are a really great analogy to the Bitcoin Lightning stack, I actually think it's a much more interesting thing to compare it to how capital markets are formed, and how derivatives and layers and payment systems, well, just kind of like we have with SWIFT, like settlement systems and payment systems and derivatives and complex contracts, et cetera, et cetera. I think comparing it to that model is actually really fascinating. And to think that we're extending the power of a completely trustless layer, or a deeply trust-minimized base layer that anybody can verify for themselves, essentially have the equivalent of a gold node and the ownership, the physical ownership of gold that can be transacted with anyone in the world at any moment, and encumbered with all kinds of crazy elaborate contracts and put onto a network where I can make millions of payments in no time at all with fractions, like just shavings of that gold bar, is just unthinkable. It's unthinkable. And we all do it without ever compromising the Lindy effect of Bitcoin's security assumptions, without compromising the fact that that consensus network is based on the same consensus, compatible, unchanged, cemented, like ossified consensus layer, that when you know it survived for 10 years, it's going to survive. It's going to keep surviving because it's the same system that survived for 10 years. It's the same security assumptions. If you change those security assumptions, Lindy effect is worthless, it's just not there. You've just deleted it and started from scratch. So, whew, this got long and I got heated. My little Bitcoin cave is warm. Okay, I'm going to close that here. I hope that wasn't a bunch of nonsense. I think it made sense. And hopefully you guys enjoyed that one. Share it out if you did. Remember, if you want to support the show, you can always give donations and stuff. I have that stuff up on cryptoeconomy.life, and it's hugely, hugely appreciated. But we've actually had a lot of new listeners lately. The last 2 weeks have grown quite a bit. Like the numbers that I expect to see, or that for a while I have expected to see in viewer count at the end of 24 hours, have practically doubled in the last 3 weeks. So we got a lot of new people, and that means that you guys are sharing it out and talking to people about it. And that is huge because it makes it so that, you know, I look good to sponsors and my growth is appealing to them. So that's going to help me keep this thing sustainable and allow me to do this for the long haul. So thank you guys so much. Please keep sharing. Don't forget to follow me at The Crypto Economy. And if you bring one other person to this show, you have done a huge, huge benefit to me. And it is it is hugely appreciated. Thank you so much. And one other comment, my brother told me that I'm apparently an idiot because I don't know that pollo is the Spanish word for chicken. I guess I'm not a big Mexican food. He said, you've never been to like a Mexican restaurant, you idiot. So yeah, I'm apparently stupid. I had no idea that that was Spanish for chicken. But that's pollo feed. I was actually looking at it the other day. I was going to send, just for kicks, I wanted to feed the chickens again. And I went, and those chickens are going to die. Somebody needs to contact that guy because they're going to die like goldfish. Like you just keep feeding them. Because I went there, and as I loaded the website, somebody had fed them, and all the chickens are there standing underneath the feeder. And then somebody, they fed them again just to see the food dump on all the chickens' heads. And the feeder is like, I swear to God, I think it goes down in a day. I don't know how many other people we got feeding those stupid chickens now, but they're going to die from overeating. There's going to be a bunch of chickens dying from heart attacks. So don't go feed the chickens at Pollo Feed. And I'm sorry for being a stupid and not knowing any Spanish or eating Mexican food, apparently. So, all right, that was it. We will close this here. Good God, this is long. Don't forget to join me tomorrow. Thank you guys so much for listening. This has been the Crypto Economy Podcast. This was a guy's take episode because my opinion matters and everybody else is full of shit. Thanks, and I'll catch you later. Take it easy, guys.